Joanne Wilson, and this is Positively Gotham Gal. Real, honest, and meaningful conversations with women entrepreneurs about their approach to life, business, and everything in between. Eleanor Kuntz and Karen Law are the co-founders of LeafWorks, a botanical identification company that does DNA sequencing for cannabis. As the cannabis industry is going through an unprecedented wave of growth and recreational use of the plant is slowly getting legalized throughout the country, new challenges emerge, ranging from safety and fraud prevention to modern breeding techniques. LeafWorks is positioning itself as a DNA testing company from the cannabis community, hoping to build a better botanical world. We talked about their unique entrepreneurial journey and lessons learned navigating the world of the cannabis industry.
We're talking about my favorite subject today, which is cannabis.
Oh, great.
And I really love what you both are doing, but I just want to step back a second. I mean, you both are scientists.
Yes.
Yes, we are both geneticists. That's right.
And you've had a long career in that. And then so all of a sudden you made this pivot into the cannabis space. Why?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting road that we both journeyed, but the transition to cannabis was rather natural. So the work that I was doing prior to founding LeafWorks was in the natural product space, really looking at the botanical supply chain globally and best agricultural practices for medicinal plants and how you generate the highest quality medicinal plants within, you know, the best agricultural practices encompass not only what you do in the field, but also post-harvest and when those plants are in transit. And so those two aspects of the work that I was doing, it was really a natural transition when we looked at the needs within the cannabis space. It was a natural transition to move over.
Right. I mean, the needs are vast. I mean, it's happening so rapidly, yet there's so much that needs to be done.
Yeah, and that fueled for me why going into cannabis was really important, because, you know, my background is in genetic method development, and coming out of grad school, the next generation sequencing technology capabilities had changed, making it really affordable and accessible if you knew how to use those tools. But those tools didn't exist in cannabis. And so if we want to be able to have the same tools to move plants forward as you see in other crops, then we have to build those. And so you can't have this huge plant industry that has absolutely no foundational resources to support it. And so that's a tremendous opportunity. And, you know, it was being one of the first fresh PhDs that could actually help. And I just wanted to do that.
How did the two of you meet? Because certainly,
just listening to you both talk very briefly here about cannabis, it is a tremendous problem in the industry, even in regards to how do you make sure that it is what you are providing for the consumer? How do we know it's strong? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it all these different things? How did the two of you meet and start that conversation?
Well, it's kind of funny. We sat back to back for years in grad school, so we were in the same lab. And so we have been working together for a very long time, which made it really a fun, a different thing to start a company. We already knew we could work together. We had very complementary skills, and we knew we could survive in a loving way with each other in a high pressure environment. So it was all things added up to a really good foundational start to start a company.
That's great. I mean, because neither of you come out of the quote unquote, you know, entrepreneurial startup space, but I love that the two women who are essentially, you know, biogenetic scientists decided they're going to start this on their own.
Yeah, it was just a synergy of a perfect melding of the minds, and we both were really enthusiastic and had the appetite and just went for it.
So just kind of walk us through the founding of LeafWorks, you know, as you started to sit down, probably around a kitchen table, and sort of starting to drill down on what exactly you both wanted to achieve here.
Well, it was around a dinner table. We were out to dinner. Karen was, I think, a week away from defending her dissertation, and I was already doing a lot of consulting in my own. I started my own company right after grad school and stayed put and really did the lab work where I was. So we were having dinner, and I was talking about how my work was growing and changing, and we were really looking globally at what were the issues that surround botanical supply chain and transparency issues within plants in general. And so we really were diving down into those topics, and, you know, the superstar kind of lone wolf of cannabis pops up because there's so little that we know about this plant, and it's just another plant, right? So we have all of these tools that we have for all other plants. And, you know, it's very, very natural transition just to apply those techniques and those ways of thinking about not only identification, but tracking material through the supply chain. Is that label what's in there? Is that label accurate to what's actually in that jar? All of these kinds of issues are there are issues in natural products. And so seeing how large of a problem it is in cannabis, it became our first, you know, prime target because of the immense amount of information that was needed to really carry the entire industry forward to match up with what the work that's being done in other plants.
Right, which makes total sense. I mean, what's interesting is how, you know, which I'm sure you both know, is that we stopped doing any research on this plant, this weed, you know, which is literally a weed that costs nothing, anything. I mean, unless you're cultivating it and you have the right LED lightings and you want to make sure everything is, you know, certain ways, that we just stopped doing any research on this plant. And now we're sort of jumping on the bandwagon in a very amplified, put your foot on the gas way to figure out all these things that if we had started doing it at the beginning, we would have slowly evolved. But aren't there some countries that have, like, I read this really cool book called Brave New Weed. And in Israel, they seem to have really kept on top of the product and all the different ways that it's positive or negative.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good research coming out of Israel. But again, it's not, we haven't been doing it as long as we've been doing research on corn or rice. And so those fundamental tools are still really lacking. But on the biomedical side, the human plant interaction, Israel's really leading the way. Absolutely. And understanding what are those chemicals and those plants that are producing those the specific chemistries that really have positive effect on specific diseases and, you know, having positive prognosis for health benefits. Yeah, they're leading the way.
Yeah. So once you started it, then you both also started Candor, right? Which is a nonprofit organization committed to preserving the biodiversity of cannabis and hemp through education and outreach. Why did that come from LeafWorks? You know, Eleanor, you said you started a company before, but like you just started this major company with a big vision, which is certainly needed, and you are filling a tremendous hole. And then you're like, okay, let's start a nonprofit too.
I think Candor came out of the conversation about cannabis supply chain issues and cannabis breeding, because, you know, when you're trying to understand what you have, and this is what it all boiled down to at the time, right? What is what's on the label in the bottle, right? And when you are doing that in a plant system, the first thing that you do to validate that you have a certain plant is to go to a herbarium and look at the herbarium specimens of that plant to make sure that you're looking at the right thing. So if I want to make a test about different kind of hops varieties, I'm going to go to a herbarium and I'm going to see, you know, I'm going to take DNA from, you know, all these different kinds of varieties and make a test off of that, because all of those varieties have been validated that these are the different things that are here and this is the name that's ascribed to them. And in cannabis, that doesn't exist. And not only is it an issue for creating specific genetic tools that can help people screen what they have, but it also is a fundamental issue in this industry, because you have plants that are being cultivated that have been stewarded for a very long time. And then you have newcomers coming in and taking those seeds and growing it up and saying, these are now mine. right? But there's no physical record that exists to historically say, no, actually, they're not yours. These have been cultivated for a really long time already. And a herbarium serves that purpose as well. And so herbarium specimens are really the support system for all of the work that goes into bringing these plants into market. And if that resource isn't lacking, that's a fundamental problem in a plant industry. And so we started Candor to alleviate that.
Got it. So like I've seen companies that none of them really succeeded yet, but it could have been timing where they have kept the seeds of everything that has been grown in our country over the years. And so, you know, oh, that was a corn seed or that was a grain seed or whatever it may be. And then going back and understanding the DNA makeup of these seeds. And then, you know, so is that essentially what you're trying to do with cannabis is create the Wikipedia, let's say, of cannabis products that are down to the simple seed that you're growing as a weed to understand exactly what's in that seed and what you're going to get out of it.
Yeah, an herbarium really is just this fundamental baseline resource that is really integral in any of those aspects. It's integral in knowing the diversity that's out there so you can not only preserve that diversity, but you can prevent thievery of that diversity from larger, you know, from, like Karen was saying, individuals that have been stewarding these plants and, you know, they've been doing a lot of work under prohibition at great potential cost to their own human self and family life to keep these plants safe. And the community at large needs to be recognized for that. So that's a fundamental aspect of documentation. And it's also really just to do good science. You know, just like Karen said, if we're going to do a test on hops or we're going to do a test on echinacea, I need to know that the identification of the plant I'm using as the baseline for echinacea is correct. And so it allows for scientific dialogue over identity, which is critical not only for is that thing in the bottle what you say it is, which is very much our sort of lane that we're in, but also if you look to the medical community, you know, if you have two different doctors or two doctors and an herbalist, then they're all dealing with the patient with the same disease. And there is positive prognosis for the utility in, you know, cultivar A.
Okay.
And in one of these patients. And then the other two don't have good luck. If you don't really know you're holding cultivar A constant between those three people, you can't actually say that it's, you know, you can't answer the question, is it variation in the human that makes this plant not work for them for the same disease? Or is it the fact that you're not having the same plant? So it's really a way to move forward with consistency so that we can start to ask some of these bigger questions. Like, I have this kind of epilepsy and I know these three plants work really well for this person. So then we can you know, move that forward. So it's just a tool.
Right.
And we started it not because we wanted more work. My goodness. It was really because the tool didn't exist. And in order to do the good science that we really had vision to do, we had to found that resource.
So it's interesting. It just, it's for A, of course, not shocking because you both are in the medical community, right? Which is the medical community piece, which is, as we're starting to do more testing of, you know, I just read something a couple of weeks ago, someone had lung cancer, nothing was working, and they started to use particular CBD products. I mean, I'm not exactly sure how they were ingested, but it made a difference on their tumors. And so it's like, well, what was that exact product? And how do we ensure that if we do a real scientific test that is watched and, you know, we give some people placebos and other people this actual, can we then at the end of the day say, yes, these are the three seeds when they're mixed together, make a difference in X.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's really holding okay. things constant so we can ask good questions. And it's that example, if you have, you know, strain A is working for one out of three people and strain B works for two of the three people, then you can start to get down to what are the chemistries? What are the specifics that are driving that positive prognosis? Because you know, you're holding the plants constant and you can really look at the variation in the humans for their receptiveness to, you know, beating lung cancer or having a lessening of epileptic symptoms or, you know, whatever it may be.
So if you go to a store and you see, you know, the little containers or self rolls, it's like, this is OG Kush or this is Gorilla Glue, right? It's like, is it? Or even you're going to these stores now that are open in New York City that should not be selling THC because they don't really have the dispensary license yet. And they're actually supposedly they're putting stuff in this. And I'm like, what kind of shit is this? The people are buying and smoking because it's not even from a true dispensary. I'd rather buy it from the drug dealer that shows up at my door, you know? And so are you hoping that through your research with LeafWorks that everyone will have sort of like, you know, LeafWork approved? Is that the concept?
Yeah. So that's one of the major pushes for LeafWorks right now is to do a supply chain seal. And I'll let Karen really dive into that.
Yeah, you're exactly right. We're looking to certify that these things are what they say they are, because how can you have a consistent user experience? How can you know that you're going to get what you think you're getting if it's not held in constant, if it's not third-party validated? Because we all know that when you run out of something at the dispensary and it's really selling well, you fill it up with something that's not selling well, and then you sell that. And so that's the kind of thing that doesn't fly in the rest of the herbal industry. So the fact that it's something that has continued to happen in the cannabis industry is just not sustainable. Mm-hmm. And as legalization happens, it will not be legal to do that.
Right.
And so being able to put systems in place for brands that want to hit the ground running for the long term by being able to say, yes, actually, this is validated as this thing, and it is only this thing, and the bottle next to it is only this thing. And, you know, being able to have those systems is really where LeafWorks comes in.
Well, it's interesting as I'm thinking about New York, which is now in the process of about to drop the laws. And, you know, in California, which is a much more mature industry, you want to use mature for an industry, but they've been around longer, right?
And they're going to issue all these CPG dispensary licenses, and then, of course, growing licenses. And there's always new products coming in. And, you know, you're literally at the nascent beginning of some kind of regulation around the product, because right now the regulation truly is just, we've given you a license and we think you can sell it, or we think you could make good chocolate, or we think you can grow it. And that's kind of it. And you're hoping that that edible you took is consistent every time you buy it, just like when you buy an Oreo, you know exactly what it's going to taste like.
Yeah, it's really about the material and the way that the product's made, right? You got to have really good SOPs for both.
Yeah, yes, yes.
The term mature is a really good one, because it does not serve a brand to put something into the market that is not consistent, right? Like if you get that Oreo, to use your example, and it's the cream is hard one day and it's soft the next, and it's like really chocolatey one day and sort of not chocolatey the next, you're never going to buy that again.
Right.
And so it really is a long-term vision for an organization or brand to understand that having a third-party validation that the name on that jar is correct is not only good for you, but it's also, so if, you know, I'm making chocolates and you're making tinctures and someone comes and buys my chocolates and they know that the chocolates are made with Tangy or OG Kush, and they're like, I really like this experience, this entire taste profile, then there is this moment where it not only serves you as the brand itself for them to come back to you, but it also serves your neighbor, which is good, because now they're going to say, oh, I like this OG Kush, I'm going to go buy this tincture of OG Kush. And so it's actually all boats rise.
Right, right.
When you have consistency in labeling, really all boats rise. And I think it's hard because there's so much pressure on all of these organizations to do so many things, and it's so expensive. But adding the additional pain points of cost throughout that supply chain to make the consistency and really express to your consumer that you have consistency in the long run will be exceptionally beneficial.
Oh, I agree. I mean, there is so many moving parts in this industry right now. And, you know, just as you said, like, you know, people have been doing this for decades, 70 years, 100 years. People are getting stoned, you know, way back in the day. And, you know, they were doing fine and dandy with any government interaction. And
I mean, cannabis used to be normal medicine.
Yes.
It was just standard normal medicine.
Yes.
There was nothing unusual about that.
Yeah, well, that changed in the Nixon administration. But yes, I mean, even the guy that was, I think it was in his 30s or 40s,
when he oversaw a piece of the FDA that they were going to cut his funding. And so he came up with this whole cockamamie thing that marijuana was like awful for you and you were crazy and you were going to kill yourself and you were like a violent person. And then he created this name marijuana because it sounded like bad. Yeah, it was evil. And so, you know, he kept funding for like 36 years and created this narrative in our country that, you know, this is a gateway drug or, you know, you're going to end up being violent and all this stuff is bullshit.
Yeah. And it's always been a very racist narrative.
Oh, God, yes.
You know, like the, even the name marijuana, you know, so it's so interconnected with, you know, in my worldview, negative politics and, mm-hmm. you know, all kinds of sideways movement to achieve goals that have nothing. And the plant is really the down, you know, had the downfall because of all of this hugely negative verbiage around it. I don't know how to say it articulately, but it's so complicated and so interconnected, not only in our social, you know, social justice is such, that's why it's such an important part of, at least I'm really most familiar with the California regs and having that social justice part is so important because of that history.
Yeah, completely. I mean, they've even come out, I mean, Nixon's right-hand person basically said, I forget who it was, said, you know, we only did this so we could like basically keep brown and black people in jail.
It's amazing how select few individuals or organizations can have such a huge impact. But I also do take heart that that means that as an individual, you have the ability to make a dramatic impact in the positivity that you're putting out into the world. Like I do try to hold that close, but it is amazing how much damage was done by those few bad actors and how large the impact was and devastating the impact was. And it will continue to be until, you know, we see legalization and common sense laws and the people who have been putting in so much effort and time, those legacy farmers are protected, which I would like to see more.
Yeah, I would like to see more. I mean, funny enough, I mean, oh my God, I've been getting stoned for so many years. I never understood why it was illegal. And I kind of believe that eventually it would become legal. So this legalization isn't shocking to me as I've been, you know, watching it from the beginning. I do understand the red tape and the insanity of how our government works. And it's been working that way since we became a country, but I always felt that we would get there. So on another note, I mean, you guys announced a partnership with TrueTrace Technologies to create a blockchain secured platform for supply chain validation in order to meet the standards. You want to talk about a little bit why you did that? I mean, I know why you did that, but maybe you can talk a little bit about why you did that.
Yes, TrueTrace, they exist in Canada. They're coming down into the US and they are a software platform that allows people to know what they're getting through blockchain, through that chain of custody. And one of the things that they felt and we felt could be a really great collaboration is being able to do genetic validation on top of that. So not only are you getting, you know, change of hands of goods that can be tracked and traced digitally, but you also have that real world validation through DNA that it is this thing and it is only that thing. And so that's where we're able to do feminized seed certification and cultivar certifications that can go through the supply chain. And that's just a added benefit to their platform to genetically validate what's being tracked digitally.
Right, which makes complete sense. I mean, there's not even a question. This should all be on the blockchain. So I'm curious, have you been funded? Who funded this? Is this from large ag companies or science venture?
Friends and family, you know, our networks have been, they've been an amazing support system. And so we are funded. We have been funded. We did raise in our Series A an additional $1 million with a portion of that coming from a venture firm, Bonaventure Equity. We feel like they're great partners because they really value lifting people up in the industry. And so they are our only, you know, non-friends and family investment at this time. And the rest is just people in our network who support us.
That's amazing. And is anyone else doing what you're doing?
There are a handful of companies in the space, but really no one's doing what we're doing.
Yeah, there are a handful of genetics companies, but no one is really focused on the user plant interface that really is botanical supply chain and doing that good foundational work that is universal to the cannabis plants.
Very cool. And over the last, I can't believe it's almost 2 years. How has the pandemic affected your business? I mean, I remember just thinking, oh, this is going to be a couple of weeks.
Well, given that cannabis is really still a face-to-face industry, the pandemic was exceptionally difficult for us. We struggled to meet with new customers because, of course, there were no more trade shows, and that's really how we were interfacing with our community and meeting new individuals to work with. And so it's been a rough ride. I think that we've done pretty well at weathering the storm, but we're really looking forward and have had a really good time at the few trade shows that we have started to get back to.
That's great. And who are you selling your knowledge to or helping them? Are that the large companies? Are you trying to help some of the smaller companies? Like, where is the majority of your efforts being placed?
So our DNA ID services really go through the whole supply chain, irrespective of size. You know, we try to make sure that our services are easy and accessible to everyone and that can plug in at any level of operation. So if you are growing at scale, you have 4,000 acres of feminized seed that you want to validate, we can do that. If you have just, you know, three plants, you want to know if they're male or female, we can do that. It can range in scale. Genetics is something that can be done very easily, no matter really the size of the endeavor, because, you know, we're dealing with really small test tubes. So it's great that it's so accessible for everybody.
Are you going to be able to have, I guess, maybe this sounds simplistic, but maybe I'm right on, of like kits that you can essentially sell to people that are making the products and distributing to every state individually and every dispensary to say, let's just make sure this is what this says?
Yes, we do that. We do that with all of our identity tests, everything from our sex tests up to our cultivar ID tests. And I think it's a fundamental value that we have that, you know, good plants in makes good products coming out. And so really interfacing at the base of the supply chain, whether that's a small farm, that's a boutique farm that's in a specific appellation, all the way to a large scale organization that's vertically integrated and wants to, you know, validate. It's really, what are those plants at the, you know, they're the foundation of everything that we're growing. And so making sure that those are doing well, evolving in the way the market needs, not only for the agricultural growing side of the market, but also the consumer side as the consumer market matures and gets more savvy in what they really want. But that, you know, that end point is reflective of a very solid and beautiful foundation.
Yeah, I'm not so sure the consumers have figured it out, because every time you go into a store in LA, it's like, oh, new product, let me try that one. I mean, there's some brands, you know, but it's, we are far from that. And I think that's going to take some years to get there.
I think it depends on the state too, because I know that at least out here in California, we're really fortunate that we have so many amazing brands.
Yeah,
that
you
see at the dispensaries. And then if you go to other states, you go into the dispensary and you're like, oh, there's really not great selection here. So in the more mature markets, like in California, you really starting to see brand loyalty. Like if you ask me what are my favorite brands, I already know, because I've been able to try them out and see what I like. But that has not yet happened in other states. But that's the exciting opportunity that's going to happen in the next few years, where people are going to start to see what do they gravitate towards. And this is the race, right? Because those companies that want to expand, you know, MSOs or people who are in a state trying to get on the shelves that have been doing this for a very long time, you're finally going to get to see their wares. And that's exciting.
Yeah. I mean, I spend time in California, so there's just a couple things that I, from seeing them, I'm like, oh yeah, I like this product. I'm terrible at names, so I couldn't tell you the names. But I will say that what I'm seeing also in the industry, it's almost like the fashion industry, where there's like one person that's going to represent 10 brands. And then the other thing, which is in CPG, like you might be making ice cream, but you're making it in three different facilities, and those are your packers. And so if you have a great brand in California, you're going to want to hook up with someone who got the CPG license in New York, and you're going to, I guess, license your recipe to them, just as you would do if you were making, you know, gluten-free crackers.
Yeah, exactly. And the interesting thing about that is also I do a lot of traveling, and it's been really interesting to see the amount of fraud that happens where you go into a market where you know that brand is not in that market, yet it's on the shelf. And so I think combating some fraudulent is also going to happen. Some fraud is going to happen as well.
Yeah, there's going to be. Yeah, it's going to take a little while on that one. So I have to say, I love that your daughter's part of this thing, because when I was well, my kids were young and I was like running the head of sales for this company, and I would literally walk around in headphones in the house when I was home and like baking and cooking. And I remember once someone's like, "Where are you?" I was like, "Oh, I'm making chocolate chip cookies right now." And they're like, "I love that." And they gave me a huge order.
Multitasking. Yeah.
First of all, now I'm really want chocolate chip cookies.
Well, I do think that's a good thing about COVID is that we've kind of really realized people do a lot of things. And instead of having to hide those things, we're like, okay, these are what we're doing and we are capable. So it's nice.
Right. This
and
is
the
like,
reality of being a woman working. I mean, think about all the women that they're really responsible for the child's care, that have had to stay home, that have still maintained their jobs while trying to teach their kids. You know, it's just this reality of the situation. And I am so happy that people have become, you know, more accepting of the fact that women juggle all these balls and they exist, whether or not people see them on screen or hear them, you know, but they're there. So it's great.
They are there. I mean, and we should be all respectful of it. So one last question. Is there anything that surprised you in this past year, you know, of this lockdown insanity than you learned about yourselves as you continue to grow this business, which is a very cool business?
I think for me, well, so it's been a very weird ride here in California, because not only have we had the pandemic, but of course we have had some pretty horrendous wildfires. So, which just kind of compounds it, because now when you have those wildfires, you can no longer go outside to escape your home, right? You have to stay in your home. You can't really go and do anything. It's very claustrophobic. So I think something that I've learned about myself is just, I mean, being in a startup, you know, you're able to handle pressure, but I feel like I've just been kind of able to expand that pressure, being able to withstand that just from getting kind of on all sides and kind of learning to let go and go with the flow a little bit more, just emotionally being able to handle all those different things you can't control that kind of, you know, pick at your day, kind of get at you a little bit, just being able to handle that in stride more. I think that's something that has surprised me, because, you know, it's been a lot these past, you know, 2 years.
Yeah, but that's a really positive thing. I think it's
very
hard.
I think another thing, just for like, if we're talking about women, you know, I had a baby this year and, you know, working the moment I'm coming back from the hospital, that's something that surprised me as well. It's just the strength it takes to be a woman doing business. It's like, you know, there's no rest there. You got to just keep going. And the strength that I had that I didn't know that I had, that surprised me.
That's great. I mean, I hear you, particularly for women that are founders and entrepreneurs, is that the amount of things you can juggle and how many things can be up in the air is so overwhelming. But if you're able to just sort of like, you know what, it's all going to work itself out, you know, that is the best you could possibly be, because you're only going to get bigger as a company, and you are going to have, you're in an industry with so many moving parts that if you can sort of keep on that, I'm going to be mellow, you know, that's a hard thing to do.
Yeah, I agree.
Completely. And for me, it's really been that really embracing the roll with it mentality, which is exactly what I think you were just speaking to.
Yeah,
you know,
it's exactly.
Are always going to come up. The schedule is never going to be more empty. You know, there's always going to be more things, and just being able to roll with it, being able to prioritize and keep moving forward.
I have to say, some of the best entrepreneurs I know, when they had children, they became even better, because they realize that micromanaging and being in all this stuff, it's like, I got other things to do. And they became even better as entrepreneurs and as leaders, because, you know, they just don't have the time for nonsense.
Yeah, you get straight to it. You do what you got to do.
All right. Well, thank you both for coming on. What you are doing is just fabulous. I just love what you're both doing. And, you know, I myself is taking a deep dive in the cannabis world as New York comes online. And so it's an area that I'm just blown away by. It reminds me very similar to the early days in technology where, you know, 1 hour you miss. And there's so many moving parts, like what you guys are doing. It's just like, wow, of course that makes sense, but I didn't even know it was out there. And so this is really great conversation.
Well, it's been wonderful to talk to you. And it's so great to hear what's going on in New York. It's going to be a huge mover and shaker state within this in particular sector. So I'm going to be super interested to just see how it all unfolds. So we'll definitely want to talk to you more as things do unfold.
I would love that. I mean, I believe the number I read is that the United States had $22 billion in revenue last year, and that's legally without a bank. So there should be a lot that's going to change in the years to come. All right. Well, thank you both. And we will definitely be in touch.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
To learn more about LeafWorks, you can go to their website at leafworks.com. Our next guest on Positively Gotham Gal will be Anne Marie Slaughter, the writer, political scientist, and head of the think tank New America.